Last time we were together, I spoke about the relationship with the higher self and offered an overview both of the relationship with the higher self, but also what it asks of us once we are in relationship with it. A certain attentiveness that is needed, a certain nourishment, and a certain listening that is required to both hear what is being communicated and also how best to respond and what that requires of us once we are in relationship with the higher intelligence of our soul, of our higher consciousness. And today I want to speak a little bit more about the listening component. Mrs. Tweedy used to say that the path, mystical life, requires a certain attentiveness. And she used this metaphor, this image of being a cat by a mouse hole, having to be infinitely attentive and infinitely relaxed. And that is, of course, a state of listening, because to be in a space of listening is to be in a space of attentiveness. And of course, listening to one's higher self is not purely listening with human ears. You're listening with your entire being. It is communicated to you on all sorts of ways that require you to be attentive, using all of you, just like a cat is lying there at the mouse hole, using all of itself to be in relationship to that potential meal behind the baseboard through the hole. Infinitely relaxed, because it may be a long time before that mouse shows up. And so being tense and agitated and anxious about that meal isn't going to help anybody. And the same really is required of us. Being in a space of anxiety or tension about when this message might come from one's higher self isn't a good long-term strategy. It will give you, you know, stomach ulcers and back pain and probably other things as well. And one has to settle into a state of being where one is just constantly present, constantly attentive, but also just relaxed and in yourself, content. You know, you watch a cat by a mouse hole, it's very content. Cats are so content in that space of listening and attentiveness. I always loved that analogy that she used to share over and over and over again. And in truth, you know, living a mystical life in everyday life, which is what this series of talks has really been trying to explore, is to be in a constant state of listening and attention, because you are in this constant state of relationship. And if one is in a constant state of relationship, one must be in a constant state of listening. That is what is required. Otherwise, you're just barreling through life. You're barreling through spiritual life. You're barreling through mystical life, following your own agenda, even if it's a good agenda, agenda of doing your practices and living by the principles of the path and living a moral life and being compassionate and empathetic and generous and all the things that one does once one has made that step away from a life, a worldly life, and towards a mystical and spiritual life. But those are like, you know, broad boundaries within which one lives. They're helpful pointers. They give you a framework. But it is through a state of listening that one's real relationship, first with one's higher self and then the teacher, and then ultimately with the divine, is through that space of listening that one learns to be in relationship outside of any predetermined rules or guidelines that can be helpful to to stay oriented, to stay in relationship with oneself, not to get caught in the world of illusion, not to get caught in the world of the ego. But it is really listening on the level of the soul and learning how to be in that space of constant attentiveness, constant presence, constant awareness, and be infinitely relaxed. And there are really two sides. I mean, there are many sides to listening, but for the sake of this talk, let me try to simplify it a little bit. You know, there is learning how to listen, to be attentive, to be in that space of receptivity. And then there is, of course, learning how to respond to what you have been shown, to what you have heard, to what you have felt. And the first, learning how to listen, is something that takes a long time, just like learning how to respond takes a long time. They develop in tandem. Nothing happens overnight. You know, they are developed in parallel. But they are the two fundamental ways of learning how to listen, how to be present to what is being shown to you, and then how to respond. Because it's one thing to be told, from your higher self, to be communicated to, but then what does one do with that? One has to learn how to interpret what is being shown to you. To figure out how best to respond. And of course, so much of the grinding down of one's ego happens through how one responds to what one is being shown. It's like so often one is told things, is shown things, one intuits things, feels things, but you may not like what you are being told. And it's almost like there appears on one shoulder the angel and the other the devil, and the ego and the higher self like to have it out. He says, but no, I want to go out tonight. I want to be with this person. I want to buy this thing. I want this, that, or the other. And the devil and the angel on one shoulders, the ego and the higher self, they go at it. It isn't just through life itself as it unfolds or teachings that one is dissolved and ground down, and this transfer of power from the ego running the show to the higher self running the show happens. It is through how one engages with what one is shown through the relationship one has with one's higher self, the path, the teacher, and that is through the interpretation of what one hears, what one feels. And learning how to respond in a grounded way. But first, one must learn to listen a little bit, just to be able to hear more clearly what is being communicated to you. And as I said last time, you know, even before one makes a real conscious relationship with one's higher self, one that is come together in a way that one's higher intelligence is able to communicate more freely, one has already felt what it means to be given knowledge about how to respond to certain situations in life, you know, certain intuition, a certain feeling in the gut often. So often in the gut, you feel it in the gut. And it's like the body is telling you something. The intelligence of the body is connected to the intelligence of the higher self. It is connected with the intelligence of the soul. And you feel that something feels wrong about the situation, doesn't feel right. And we've all experienced what it's like to actually ignore that feeling and then go, I should have listened to myself. And also to have listened and to be like, I'm grateful that I followed my feeling there and I was right. You know, but as one makes a relationship with one's higher self, it's like that level of intuition, it deepens. One often still feels things in the gut. There's a feeling there. But there's often more awareness present. And one can be given hints, you know, both in waking consciousness and how to be with a situation, or in one's dreams or in meditation. You can be shown things. And it is when one is shown things that one has to be attentive to them. And to be able to discern, you know, am I being told something that's really important, or, you know, or is it just my imagination running wild, you know? One needs to have a certain level of discernment and maturity and be grounded so that one is not chasing, in quote, spiritual instructions that are constantly being downloaded to you, that are telling you everywhere to go. One has to realize that it is especially at first, you know, fleeting that one is given this information. It is, if when someone comes to me and says, you know, I'm being told this every day, every night, I'm getting these incredible dreams, these incredible experiences, it's like I kind of say, like 90% of that, you know, I don't really imagine to be true, because it doesn't quite work like that. Even when one is in a great state of relationship with one's essential nature and the divine beyond that, it is not like one is in a constant space of, you know, communication like that. It doesn't function like that. We're still human beings. We're still dense. It takes time. It takes so much time. So it's almost like that's why one has to be even more at the beginning, so patient, like the cat at the mouse hole, so attentive, so that when it does come, you're able to be with it in the right way. And so in the beginning, so much is really just being in a space of receptivity, of orienting yourself to be in a space of receptivity, of each day being in a space of receptivity. Now, of course, the practices on this tradition, they help facilitate that space of receptivity. If one is doing a meditation in alignment with oneself and connected to the tradition, then the energy that goes with that, then automatically you're in a space of receptivity for what can be shared with you. In the same way, the zikr does the same thing. The practices help, but one must also put conscious attention there. It's like you're training yourself to be receptive to what might be shared with you. Perhaps each morning you kind of set that intention to be aware and attentive. You are teaching yourself to be on the lookout. And at first it really feels like you're spinning plates. You know, it's like you're already doing so many things. You're trying to learn these practices to constantly remember God with each breath. That alone, you know, that's several plates spinning right there. And you're trying to be, you know, not caught in the grip of your ego. There's a few more plates right there. You're trying to be a good person and not be rude and unkind and impatient. There's a few more plates. So already there's 10, 12, 15 plates spinning. Now you've got to add more. But that's what it's always like at the beginning, when one learns how to really do something so new. Because even though for all mystical seekers, this is not the first merry-go-round, this is not the first incarnation of a life that is dedicated towards coming closer to God. One of the great mysteries is that within each life, we have to go through the whole process of learning so much again. Being able to learn so much just to be able to reconnect to that thread of what we learned before. And so each lifetime we have to learn to spin those plates again. Maybe each lifetime it's a couple plates less, if we're lucky. But you have to spin those plates And so being attentive is like another plate we have to spin and watch and be careful that it's not going to fall. And of course, over time, just like learning the practices become second nature, being attentive becomes second nature. It's like you have your receptors up all the time, knowing how to respond to what might be communicated to you, how to respond to situations, you know, in the right way. Because as one deepens one's ability to listen to one's true self, one also deepens one's ability to live in relationship to the world around us. They grow in tandem. Because you're listening from a deeper place within you. You're not listening from the place of the ego. You're listening from the place of the soul. And so it's one's way of listening, one's way of being shifts so much as a result. And as I said last time, in truth, the only way one really learns how to listen is by learning what happens when one doesn't. It is always the way that one learns, is by mistakes, and making mistakes, and picking oneself up, and dusting oneself off, and then realizing, oh, okay, that feeling wasn't just an emotional reaction or something else. It was actually something being communicated to me that I ignored, and I won't ignore it next time. So one has to have the humility to recognize that that is part of the learning process, that is part of the way one learns to be attentive, and be infinitely relaxed and present, is by making mistakes and seeing what it's like when one doesn't. You know, when one simple way one learns how to listen is not to react right away to what one has been shown, is to sit with it. To sit with it. What is that feeling? Where is that coming from? You know, to get a sense of what is being shown to you. Sometimes it is obvious. Sometimes the signs are right there. There's no second guessing what you are being shown. But sometimes maybe more subtle, especially if it comes through a dream or an image in meditation or even words that are shared. It may be elusive. The language of the soul, the images that belong to the soul, they don't always deliver a very, you know, straightforward message. Sometimes it requires subtlety to understand what is being shown to you. And part of learning to listen on this path is also to learn to understand the language of the soul. That's why we work with dreams so much. Not just because they are very helpful in one's, you know, maturity on a psychological level, but also because they provide a gateway to the soul. The story of the soul, the language of the soul is so often communicated in dreams. Our own very being, our own soul, is communicated to us in dreams, as well as the language of this tradition, or the language of mystical experiences, which transcend any tradition. And so we learn to understand symbols, and we learn to understand what we are being shown, and that is also part of the journey, to learn to interpret what one is being shown through one's dreams and one's experiences. And yes, it's in this tradition also something that is shared with others and shared with the teacher, and perhaps an interpretation from the teacher can be helpful, or in a group setting, sharing that and hearing a perspective outside of oneself. Because sometimes even when it's so obvious, we struggle to see things that are so plain in front of us. So we learn to listen to our dreams, and we learn to listen to our experiences. We learn to have patience that it's going to take time to really understand the language of the soul and how it's communicated to us. You know, I've heard dreams my entire life. I used to grow up hearing dreams at the breakfast table so often, I was just appalled by the fact that we couldn't just sit together as a family and eat breakfast without hearing somebody else's dreams. And even after 41 years of hearing dreams all the time, you know, sometimes it just stumps you. Your own dream stumps you. What does it mean? Shown, what are those symbols? What does it mean? It takes time, it takes a lifetime. One is always learning, one is always deepening one's understanding of the language of one's soul. You know, when one always stays attentive, the years go by, as the decades go by, you have to become even more attentive at that mouse hole. You've just figured out how to be relaxed, so it's okay. You don't mind it. That is your way of being. Figure out that as a result of that, maybe some things you can't do anymore. You're almost too sensitive for certain things. It is an unfortunate byproduct for some of us. The more one is in a deep state of listening, the more receptive one is to the language of the soul, the more one picks up all the other stuff that's out there. One has to discern what is yours and what is something else. What is an individual experience? What is a collective experience? These are things you learn along the way. These are things that you cannot teach through a simple set of instructions. You have to go through the process yourself of having a dream and understanding, is it my dream? Is it a collective dream? Is it being communicated something from my higher self? Or is it just a spiritual fantasy? Is it just my imagination? My ego getting hold of my spiritual self and having some fun, which happens rather often. Learning to understand and discern what is really true and what is not. And that only plays out year after year as one goes through that process. Being able to understand what one is being shown through trial and error, through reflection, through failure. And then on the other hand, you have this how best to respond scenario. And as I was saying before, often it's like the ego on one side of your shoulder and the higher self on the other. The devil and the angel playing out. Well, do I really, really need to do that? You know, because it's rare that one is delivered, especially at the beginning, especially for the first few years, one is given information from one's higher self. And then one is completely surrendered, just says, please, yes, of course. I will do as what I've been commanded by my true nature. No, you know, it's it's being interpreted through the ego as you understand it and question it and weigh, do I really want to do this? But no, that gets in the way of my agenda. And so that is where also the learning of how to listen plays out. Is watching oneself as one responds. And, you know, that's why sometimes it can be helpful to sit with it and kind of watch the whole scenario play out and seeing how you respond. And sometimes you need to go through that process just to realize, oh, you know, that was my ego trying to derail this and so on and so forth. You know, and it happens to the best of us. It happens to all of us. So often have I sat there fighting tooth and nail what I have been shown. Because sometimes it doesn't feel fair. So often what you are shown doesn't feel fair from the ego's perspective. The higher self has a different agenda than the ego. You always have to remember that. The higher self has a different agenda than the ego. And just because you've made a connection with your higher self and you're able to be in communication with your higher self does not mean that those different agendas are not going to play out in conflict with one another. It's really how you respond, how you engage, how you connect with that information. How you respond to what you have heard. And I struggle with that so much. My own experience was one of very much a struggle of listening to that. You know, even if it was very clear instructions, it would be like, yes, but I want my own freedom right now. I don't, especially when I was younger, really hated it so much. So people say, oh, you were raised in a spiritual family, such a blessing. I would say such a curse sometimes, because what you wanted to do on the level of the ego sometimes wasn't, felt like it wasn't being allowed, and so you would fight. So we each have our own experience. Mine is very unique. We all will have experiences of wanting to fight what we are shown. Sometimes it is small things, but sometimes they are big things. Sometimes it is a change in career, a relationship which is no longer right for us. We have to leave things behind that we're attached to. So often we have to leave things behind we're attached to. And the ego doesn't like to do that. Because the ego will fight. And sometimes the ego just wants to assert its authority. And this can continue to happen over and over again. Just to say, like, I want to do what I want to do. Leave me alone. Even when one is fairly surrendered. Sometimes the human need and the needs of one's soul, they come together. They're so entwined as one. And sometimes they're really not. And sometimes the higher self could be cruel and not care about the human need. It doesn't care that you don't have a relationship. It doesn't care that you don't experience human love. It doesn't care that you're pretty much penniless. It doesn't care that you failed at another career. It doesn't care because it's thinking, yes, but you're coming closer to God each day. So that's good. You know? I had this experience. I've shared this story, I think, a couple years ago in Wales, a few years ago, where this is a good teaching experience for me, my own self, but also for others. I was having one of those times where kind of everything that could go wrong was going wrong. Everything was going wrong. Life was just a struggle on every level. It was very, very hard. And in the midst of that, I was having like a horrible week. I just, Murphy's Law is another problem. And my truck, it broke down. Great, another thing to deal with. Sometimes life can really be like that. It's like sometimes you're really kicked when you are down. And I thought, you know, being very masculine in response, at least I can address this one thing. I can fix this thing. I can fix the car. Car, an old truck, complicated parts, couldn't get it. To hell with that. I'm going to go out and buy a new car and buy a new truck. And I felt very happy that I could solve this problem. You know, so I went off to buy a truck, and a friend drops me off at the car dealership, and I go to buy this truck. And as soon as I walk into the car dealership, I have this feeling that says, do not buy a truck. What are you doing? you're wasting all this energy. Please leave right now. And I, this is clear as day. It was a feeling. It was a voice, you know, what, clear as day. And I was like, go away. I'm solving my problem that I can solve right now. I want nothing to do with you. Piss off. Right? I said, I'll test drive that one, please. You know, and I go off and I test drive it. While I'm test driving, I have like the worst stomach ache you could possibly imagine. My whole being is saying, get out of this car, go away, stop. And I deliberately just push it aside. I have the right to be able to do this if I want to. Go away. What is this gonna, what is this problem? So I buy a truck. And I come back and he said, do you like the car? I said, yes, I'm buying it. Let's go back. Let's go to the place, do the paperwork. And I go and I sit down in his office and you know, start printing out all these forms. Or it was on a tablet, actually. That's what it was. It's all electronic. It's all on a tablet. You sign on the tablet and press the accept button, you know. They go through this thing. Yes, like, sign, I accept. Sign, I accept. And as each, you know, screen is accepted, I get closer to having the final one where you can accept this, buy this car. Cannot return. You know, the feeling is getting worse and worse. My higher self is literally going, hello, 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 you know, battering me on the head. And the last screen appears. And again, I'm ignoring it the whole time. The last screen appears. And just as I'm about to sign my name, power goes out in the building. And I go, okay. And I look to the guy, and the guy's like, I don't know what's going on. I'm going to go find out. He comes back and says, 5 minutes later, and I'm thinking in this, while he's gone to find out what's going on, I'm thinking, okay, I'm sorry. I surrender, you know. And he comes back and he says, the whole block's out. The whole block of all the car dealerships, all the power's out. I said, okay. And he said, you'll have to wait until this is over for you to buy your car. And I said, and it was funny because another sign, you know, was, and I'm sorry, this story is dragging on, but the guy who was selling my car, you know, he had mala beads all wrapped around his wrist. And he had like an ohm sign hanging on his neck. It is Marin County. So I guess even the car salesmen are spiritually inclined. And I said, so you're a spiritual guy, I asked him. And I said, you know, I have to ask you a question because, you know, here I was in the situation. I thought, you know, I'll make the most of it. And I said to him, I said, you know, I really had the feeling the whole time I was here that I shouldn't buy this car. And I've been going over the whole time we were talking, I shouldn't buy this car, I shouldn't buy this car. It's not right for me. And then the power goes out. And I said, you're a spiritual man, right? You're a Buddhist. What are you? He says, you know, something like, I believe in the universal consciousness of one, you know, something very Marin-like. And he said, but, you know, don't tell anybody I told you this because I'll get fired. But if that happened to me, you know, I would walk away. So I smiled, you know, because sometimes there are lessons one learns in life through fighting oneself. And that was a lesson for me. It was just like a lesson for me and an amusing one, you know. The whole power out in the building. And then I had to call a cab because I had no car. I needed to go pick up my son for school, and I called an Uber. And the Uber driver came, and he was old. He was like 80-something. He was so old. He shouldn't have been an Uber driver. And he said, you know, he said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to pick up my son from school. And he says, wait, what are you doing at the car dealership? I was going to buy a car. He says, what happened? I said, well, something intervened. And he said, ah, you mean God? And I said, well, I guess, yes. He said, you know, He said, I'm 80, I think 84 or something. And he said, you know, and I lost everything in the financial crash. I lost everything. Lost my house, lost my savings. I have to, you know, drive this cab 8-10 hours a day to make a living. And the only thing that I've learned through this is the only thing I can count on is my relationship with God. And I, you know, sometimes life gives you these teachings. It's like even the cab had something to teach me. It's like sometimes the human desire, which is sometimes so natural, to be in control, to want to solve a problem if you're overcome by so many issues. And the higher self sometimes says, no, this is a waste of time. Listen to me, please. So it's a long story. But to me, it was a good teaching story. A lesson learned. Because even if we know all the rules of what we should do, even if we've learned to listen to our higher self, we understand so clearly what it's saying, sometimes we want to fight back. Sometimes we want to be in control. No matter how far one has progressed or thought one has progressed, one always has more to learn. More humility to be shown. Usually the lessons are less dramatic. It doesn't require a city block to go out of power, and, you know, a saintly cab driver to come and tell you what's what. But sometimes it's the simple things that remind us that it's one thing to be given information, which is such a blessing, but then it's another to really listen and to be respectful of it and to realize that's really what it means to be surrendered.